folks. Chef Craig Hartman here from Chew the Fat. Tonight we have part two. It's part two of the Jeff Lazat interview, one of the four competitors finalists of the Bocuse d'Or competition that'll happen at the Culinary Institute in January. So without further ado, Jeff Lazat. So did you, what did he hire you as? You did a stage, then he said, okay, you know, you're going to be a commis, or what did he, what was the job they gave you?
Well, just to be clear, when I was there, David Boulay, wasn't participating in my stage. He wasn't in the kitchen. It wasn't like I was sitting down with him and talking about, you know, potential to work for him. Right. It was his chef de cuisine at Danube who offered me the job after a 2-day stage. And I immediately said yes after, you know, seeing some other places. I just felt like it was the right thing. It felt good. It had good energy. And he said, you know, come in, be the chef de partie of Grand Manger. You're going to work 6 days a week, coming in at noon and closing, which is, you know, anywhere from 11 to 2 in the morning. And you get $500 a week for it. And, I wouldn't have been able to pull that off if I hadn't found a rent-controlled dump of an apartment in Brooklyn that my uncle helped me find for, I think I was paying at the time, $300 a month for it. So it definitely allowed me to make it in New York, because any young cook will tell you, I mean, that's the biggest obstacle to,
true.
To going there, and it's just the cost of living is crazy. And
true.
If you're gonna get
$500 a week, you need to.
It's tough to pull it off
in New York City. So the garbage men make like four times that. Just so you know. So where'd you go after Danube?
So I was at Danube for just under a year, and it was apparent to me that things weren't really going the way I envisioned them and the way I looked at my opportunities there. David Boulay was, Chef Boulay was just potentially going to close Danube, and he was working on a bakery next door.
Mm-hmm.
He had a lot of things going on, and Danube was sort of the ugly stepchild in the back that he didn't really want to pay much attention to. So I didn't want to be there anymore. And Le Bernardin was where I wanted to be.
Sure.
For two reasons, because it was Le Bernardin.
Right.
And because it was all fish. And mm-hmm. at the time I really enjoyed working with fish. And I thought that this would be the place where I could really, progress with my skills and my techniques involving all things under the sea.
Yeah, right. So how'd you get in the door over there?
So I did a stage. Le Bernardin only allows stages on Saturdays. I'm not sure if Chef Chris over there has changed that policy, but from what I understood that they only do stages on Saturdays, and right. Le Bernardin only does dinner on Saturday. So we did a Saturday stage and worked dinner service. You know, came in and obviously helped the cooks, do their mise en place and get a rundown of how all things work there in the LB. And so I came back and did one more stage because they invited me back. And Chef Chris Mueller, the chef de cuisine there,
right,
offered me a job. And at Le Bernardin, everyone starts off in Grand Manger.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of who you are or your relationship or your experience, they had a system. And to this day, I've never worked anywhere that has had such a profound impact on the way I feel about organization and delegation and, you know, systematic operations. They had it down.
Yeah.
They really did. and it was impressive. So I started in Garmanger, and I did my a year there. Chef Mueller, when he hires you, you know, kind of requires you to do a year. And so, of course, I signed on, and quickly realized that what I was doing at Danube and what I was doing all these other restaurants before really didn't hold anything to what goes on at Le Bernardin.
Sure.
So it was huge. It was a huge step up for me.
How much hands-on is Eric Repair?
Chef Repair is in the kitchen, you know, almost every day.
Yeah.
I'd say every day. He's there. He's very much involved.
Mm-hmm.
He's the spirit of that restaurant.
Yeah.
He's the energy. He's the leader. And you know, his presence is felt when he's in the kitchen and when he's not. You know, he'd come in and usually his routine, because I started in Garmanger. I was doing PM Garmanger my first couple months, and then I got moved to Canapé, to Moose Bouche.
Right.
And then after about 6 months, they switched me to AM Hot Apps. So that was a complete flip-flop in my schedule. I was getting on the train in Brooklyn at 4:35 in the morning to get to the kitchen by 6:30 to get all my mise en place set. And part of Hot Apps in Le Bernardin is a family meal. So
nice.
There was a big step up in terms of my responsibility and schedule-wise. And just wasn't used to working you know, mornings and getting off at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. By the time I was done with work, though, at 4, I was...
You were spent, weren't you?
Out sleeping on the train back to Brooklyn. But yeah, Chef Repair would come in every day for lunch. Just around 11 o'clock, he'd come in, he'd greet everyone, shake everyone's hand, which I thought was great. I had never seen anything like that before, where the chef, you know, takes the time out to say hello to every single person in that kitchen, look them in the eye, shake their hand, ask them how they're doing. You know, and then while he's doing that, he's got his eyes all over your mise en place. He sees things that you would never expect him to see. And, you know, and he'll go straight to the saucier and he'll taste all the sauces and make sure all the mise en place is, as the French would say, bien rangé.
Yeah.
Well placed. So that was really cool because he was there every day. And then at dinner, he'd be there, you know, almost every night as well. You know, his presence was always at Le Bernardin. And if it wasn't, he had a great team to follow through.
You know, well, you know, he is
chef de cuisine.
He'll be here in Charlottesville, by the way, on Sunday. He's doing a talk with Anthony Bourdain at the Paramount Theater. And so he'll be here, and so this will be very timely because we will release this podcast at the same time he's talking. So, you know,
cool. You should get him on the show, Chef.
You know, I'm gonna have to work on him. You know, we do these raw interviews. You know, and I've talked to a few people who will have to do everything through their publicist. You know, make sure they say the right thing. So, but I don't think he'd be one of them. So. I'm going to drop your name, Jeff Lozotte. See if he even remembers. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that.
I doubt he would, but, you know, but Chef Repair, I think, is definitely someone who knows if you've worked for him and appreciates it. And the other thing I want to say is when he'd come into the kitchen and greet everyone, I didn't realize this at the time, but this is something that was very French to do. You know, it was just the whole culture and being respectful and the manners that are involved in that, you know, and that was something I ended up seeing all the time when I ended up working in France. You know, that was the norm. You know, you have to greet everyone. So I thought that was really cool. And so yeah, you know, Chef Repair,
I think
get him
on
the show.
Awesome.
I'm sure him and Anthony Bourdain will We'll take it to you. He'll chew the fat right off you.
True enough. True enough. So Jeff, you one of the things that I think is pretty special about your background while you were at La Bernardin is that you applied for the scholarship for the Jean-Louis Palladin Foundation. And it's a pretty special scholarship. He was a special chef, you know. And I know that Eric worked for him, you know, when he first came to U.S. And I know from, you know, being in Washington, D.C. back in the day that Jean-Louis was just a character, but his food was, you know, unbelievable. And this was there was a no food cost guy right there, you know, more truffles and foie gras and sea urchins and that you've ever seen in your life. But tell us a little bit about that scholarship and what it meant to you.
So I didn't really know who he was. My first introduction to Jean-Louis was when I was on Martha's Vineyard and I was working for Chef Kenworth at Sweet Life Cafe. He one summer he was moving, and I helped him move some things. As a reward, he gave me some of his old cookbooks, you know, a couple old Bocuse cookbooks. And then finally he handed me this one huge, you know, coffee table looking cookbook.
It's funny that you call that an old cookbook, you know, because I still think of that as one of my new cookbooks.
Well, it's relative. Time, I'm sure it was, you know, revolutionary. It still is to this day. But yeah, he gave me Cooking with the Seasons, and I was totally enthralled with it, and so that was my introduction. And,
right. That's
just,
a beautiful
opening
book.
Up that book really metaphorically opened up a lot of things for me in my life. So that was my introduction. And then when I was at La Bernardin, Chef Repair would talk about, you know, Chef Palladin, and I found out that one of the cooks that I was there with at the time, Eliza Jameson, she was working Monk Station, which is one of the hardest stations, Monkfish Station, it's
right.
called, at La Bernardin, when I first started. And she was a recipient of the Jean-Louis Palladin Foundation the year before. And she had gone up to work with Rod Mitchell up at Brown Trading in Portland, Maine, where we would get a lot of our fish from at La Bernardin. And she couldn't say enough great things about it and how awesome of an opportunity it was. So that kind of triggered something in me. And, you know, I was always looking for something to enrich who I was, not just as a cook, but as a person when I was in the city. And when you're in New York, it's kind of daunting the amount of things you can do and the opportunities that are there. And so I was getting involved with things like City Harvest, you know, when I wasn't working, I was trying to help them donate food and working at soup kitchens and stuff like that. And I was taking a class, a food history class at the new school and stuff, just trying to branch out a little bit from the kitchen. And when
because you didn't have anything else to do.
One day I went into work and Chef Repair had posted something in front of his office about the JLP Foundation and the opportunities that were being offered, scholarships that were being offered that year. So he encouraged his staff, the guys in the kitchen, to apply for it, and I did right away. And it was surprising because it seemed like none of the other guys really cared or really understood the opportunity that was what was there. So sure, I applied and I applied for, you know, they have a lot of things you can do. You can go, you know, work with Farmer John over in Chef's Garden, Ohio. Learn about microgreens and organic vegetables, and I thought that was pretty cool. Or you can go up and work with fishermen in Alaska and do halibut fishing. All these great opportunities to basically connect a young chef with where the food's coming from, how it's produced, how it's sourced.
And how long?
So when now, I,
if you went,
when
if,
I applied,
if you won, how long would that opportunity last?
Everyone's different. I mean, a couple weeks. It was kind of an agreement between your employer and you that you would have a couple weeks off, paid vacation, basically, to go
right
and stage at these places. And so I applied for the brown trading one because I thought that would be really cool to see where we're getting all our fish from.
Sure.
And how it's handled, how it's received, how it's purchased, that whole system. And chef's assistant, Mandy Oser, who's a wonderful lady, she pulled me aside one day after I had applied when I was and my mise en place ready for dinner.
Sure.
And told me that I had been selected to do the scholarship, but that the brown trading one wasn't being offered and that they had an opportunity to go to Bordeaux and learn about Bordelaise wine. And kind of asked me if, you know, if I'd be interested.
If you'd be interested
like
in going to Bordeaux.
And I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's awesome.
I was absolutely interested in that. So that was done. I had been awarded the scholarship to go to Bordeaux.
That's awesome. And how long did you go?
The trip was for 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. It was with another. It was two of us, two guys. Actually, we were both in New York at the time.
Mm-hmm.
A chef named Dennis Stella, who was working at Picholine, Terrence
right.
Brennan's restaurant,
mm-hmm.
Went with me to France, to Bordeaux. We were received by a dear, dear friend of mine now. His name is Christophe Chateau.
Mm-hmm. Wow, good name for someone from Bordeaux.
He is, Bordeaux wine runs through this guy's blood. He is the ambassador. He really is, in all senses
wow.
of it, the ambassador of Bordeaux wine to the world. And so Dennis and I were lucky enough to spend the 2 weeks at his house with his wife Sophie and his four beautiful children. And basically every day, Christophe would wake us up and around 8 o'clock in the morning, and we'd hit it. Get something to eat real quick. You know, the French don't really eat breakfast,
sure.
but Dennis and I, we always had to have something in the morning. And we'd hit the road, and we'd drive out of Bordeaux and go visit, at the time he was working on a project for the Cinq Côtes de Bordeaux, which were five different appellations within
right.
Bordeaux that he was trying to merge together into one Côtes de Bordeaux, which exists today.
Uh-huh.
Which is a really, really great accomplishment of his. So we'd go and visit vineyards, and you know, get tours and learn about the winemaking process and meet with the winemakers and sit down and have lunch with them and even, you know, pick some grapes because we were there out in September. So it was during the vendage.
Right.
And
awesome.
Just get introduced to Bordeaux. And the wine business out there, and to learn the that it's not as, you know, you think as romantic as it is. It's a big business. And
yeah.
Christophe's a businessman. He's also a lover of food and all things wine. But he's first and foremost a businessman. And it was apparent to me that if you want to make it in Bordeaux, you have to be the same. You know, it's super, super competitive. You know, sure, we went to Pouillac, and we went to go see the Premier Cruz.
Nice.
Chateau Margaux and Oprion and Latour.
That must have been crazy.
You know, his heart and what I learned that I really liked about Bordeaux was the lesser known appellations and the smaller guys, smaller producers who were making just as good wine that cost a fraction of the price that
right.
you know these Grand Crus do, what can I say? I mean, I fell in love with
sure.
with that whole region within the 2 weeks that I was there.
I imagine. Yeah. So, you you know, you were over there and you were doing this thing. At any time, did you feel as if, you know, you were kind of blessed, or this was really, you know, I mean, how did you feel? You know, you had this Jean-Louis Paladin Foundation. You know, he died of cancer, young. Not, you know, I say young, but he, you know, he was just at his prime, you know, as a chef, you know. And so we lost a person who was like, you know, a true genius and kind of a madman, you know, like some chefs are. And his you know, people who loved him, like Eric Repair and Len DePasse in Washington, D.C., you know, they did this foundation, and they're looking for people, you know, like yourself. Did you feel a responsibility of, you know, you really need to put a lot into this because of, you know, what you got from them?
Absolutely. I mean, when I was out there, Chef, I felt like I had to be an ambassador of, you know, everywhere we went, Christophe would introduce us as Le Grand Chef Américain. And he'd always talk about how Dennis worked at Picholine, a great restaurant in New York, and how I came from, which was just newly crowned. The Michelin right. guide had just come out that year for New York, and Le Bernardin had gotten 3 stars.
Right.
And he'd always introduce us as, you know, the trois étoiles, the 3-starred Michelin chefs from New York. You know, I obviously felt some pressure to represent and to be an ambassador for not only my country, but for American chefs and American cuisine.
Right. Big responsibility.
Well, yeah. But being with Christophe and that trip was more about us getting a sense and appreciation of what it is to make wine
right.
and how closely related it is to cooking, and how whatever you do in life, whether you're going to build a cabinet or you're going to create a menu or you're going to, you know, create wine, you have to have a level of dedication and passion exactly for what you're going to do. And it's going to be, if it's done with your heart, and if it's done with, you know, with who you are, and your, if you put your all of yourself into it, then it's going to be reflected in your menu or in your cabinet or in your wine.
True.
So, and they'd always talk, the winemakers, they'd always talk about how important the grapes are, how important the terroir is. But then the real, you'd say the magic of making wine and even cooking too, is when you take these raw ingredients and how do you put them together, and how do you create something that is better than the individual parts by themselves?
Yeah.
And so I sure. saw a direct link between what they were doing out in the vineyards in Bordeaux and to what I was doing in the kitchen. And I think that was huge for me to realize that I'm not just a cook. I'm doing something bigger than that. I'm making something with the raw ingredients, the products from the earth, just like these guys are. And it's sure. it's really special.
Yeah, I think it's oh. awesome. So you, you know, you were over there, and then you come back, and you've been working, but now you're embarking on another kind of journey, which is becoming a competitor to hopefully this time, or maybe even in the future, but maybe it's this time, be the representative for the United States in the Bocuse d'Or, which is probably one of the most exciting competitions for chefs ever on the face of the earth. And there is, of course, we have the, you know, we have the Culinary Olympics, which happen every 4 years that teams go to, which is, you know, very exciting and very technical. But the Bocuse d'Or, you know, being, you know, in honor of Paul Bocuse and everything, and who's been my hero all my life. This is pretty exciting. You're taking that step, and you're going to be competing at the Culinary Institute, right, in January.
Correct. Yeah, that's the competition is in the weekend of the 28th and 29th. The competition takes place on Sunday the 29th.
And so, you know, you're just starting to embark. You're getting ready. You're going to be in training. Are you a little bit nervous, or are you you just feel pretty good about it?
Yes, I am. I am nervous, but I'd say that I'm more excited than I am nervous. But I think whenever you're excited about something, there's always that element of nervousness or that shred of fear. Because truly, when anything that's exciting is, there's always some unknown involved.
Sure thing.
You know? And obviously, there's a lot of unknowns in this situation for me. So yeah, I'm excited, Chef, big time. This is an opportunity of a lifetime, and I'm honored and privileged to have made it this far and to be selected to compete with these other, you know, really talented young chefs.
True.
But in a setting that is so different than what I'm accustomed to, you know, in front of, you know, the guys that you have looked up to your entire life, that have been your, you know, your culinary counselors, like guys like, you know, Chef Keller and Chef Ballude and Gavin Case and Chef Kaysen and
right
and Chef Jerome Bocuse, all these guys that are going to be there and be watching you, is, to say the least, intimidating.
Yeah, but I think it's going to be great. First of all, you know, I'll be rooting for you, and I'm proud that you're stepping out to do it. I think you know, folks that are listening can look up the Bocuse Door online, which is BocuseDor.com, Bocuse Door. And look it up. It's pretty amazing. The competition, you know, they had a thing on one of the networks. I can't remember if it was the Travel Channel or the Food Network, where they did a, you know, almost like a documentary following the competitors through the stages of where you are now, to winning the United States, to be able to go for the United States and then going there. And I remember watching it, the tension of the competition to make the grade, to be able to go there and represent U.S., but then being there and having to get all your food and everything in France and put it all together and be in a kitchen that you may not be used to. And it's got to be exhilarating, you know. I think it's got to be exhilarating, but you almost have to be like an athlete, Jeff. I think, you know, you're going to have to be in shape. You're going to have to be able to handle not sleeping much, you know. And so you can't go there, you know, halfway. It's got to be everything, you know, everything.
It's all or nothing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
All or nothing.
And you're absolutely right about the training part. Is it's not mentally. It's physically. All aspects of who you are to be able to perform under a circumstance like that. So, sure. I mean, when I say I'm going to train, that means that I have to work on my platters. I have to work on my ideas and what I'm going to be doing with the food for the competition. But I also need to be working on my health. You know, making sure
right.
that I'm in shape. Working out regularly, going for my morning jogs before I come to work, just staying in good form is key.
Yeah, right.
Is key.
Yeah, I think that's needed. And so, just, you know, kind of to end this thing, you know, we're going to follow you, you know, with the Bocuse Door, and of course, I think it's very exciting. I hope, you know, my hope is that you win in the United States, and then you win the world championship and at your young age. And then, you know, I can just, you know, I'll be telling everybody, well, you know, my influence on Jeff, you know, was key. you know, I'll go on television locally. No, I'm just kidding. But I think it's great. And, you know, those kind of things you know, you work hard all your life to get to. So, you know, give it your best shot. And I think, you know, if it's not this time, one of the times you're going to be there for sure, and that'll be cool. So, listen, we've enjoyed talking to you, and, you know, is there anything else, you know, you want people to know about you, Jeff Lazat? That's a tough question, is it?
Well, I guess people should know that, you know, I'm in love with what I do, and I think that's why I'm able to do the things that I'm doing in my life right now might seem kind of foreign and crazy to people, but I'm doing it because it's part of who I am. I wouldn't feel right doing anything else. I wouldn't feel right sitting in an office. I wouldn't feel right, you know, if I wasn't in Chef White's every day.
Yeah.
It just feels so natural. And I guess I want to say I'm pretty lucky to have that in my life, because I know some people don't. Some people hate what they do.
Right.
And I learned early on that life is way too short to spend your time doing anything different than what you truly love.
True. True, definitely true, and great advice. You know, we've got a lot of young listeners, and you know, that are in chef schools and whatnot, and you know, they look to you know, people like yourself to you know, give them some inspiration and hopefully some great advice. And I think that's probably the best advice out there. And I appreciate you chewing the fat with me today.
Been a privilege. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome, folks. You've been listening to Chew the Fat. You've been listening to Jeff Lazat, and he will be competing in January for a spot to represent the United States at the Bocuse d'Or. Don't forget to look that up. Bocuse d'Or, BOCUSEDOR.com. It's a cool website, and if you look at the gallery of the pictures of the 2011 competition, which the chef was from Denmark that won, and
Rasmus Kofeld.
Yeah, which is unbelievable. And if you look at the pictures, the things that they've done, the technical work, along with the flavor of the food, it's incredible. You look at it, you'll be blown away. And they also have some
chef,
videos on there.
The American website actually for the Bocuse USA is www.bocuseDorUSA.org.
Cool.
That's the actual American
Bocuse d'Or USA.org.
BOCUSEDORUSA.org.
Check that one out too. That's a great site. Actually, I did see that site too. This is You'll be able to follow how people are doing on there. And folks, I bid you adieu.
I wasn't gonna sing the song tonight, or this decade, but I realized sometime earlier this year that it had been 26 years since this come out as a movie, and it was 2 years before that that it came out as a record, and it was 2 years ago on the record, which means it was like 30 Thanksgivings ago, 30 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice didn't used to live in a restaurant. She used to live in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. Seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, found the place was filled with garbage, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction and headed on toward the town dump. We got there, and there was a sign, a chain across the road, and the sign said, "Closed on Thanksgiving." We had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And so with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset, looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one, till we come to a side road, And off at the side of the side road, there was a 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, there was another pile of garbage. We decided that one big pile would be better than two little ones. And rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat. Went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie. I cannot tell a lie."